crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtiger. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, which has now officially become the Jewish state. This was made official last Wednesday night into Thursday morning when the Jewish state bill passed. Israel is now the official homeland of the Jewish people. Now, this bill was many years in the making, about seven. There were many revisions that went into it over the years and even into Wednesday night, a number of those to try and make it more palatable to the international community. Now, when this bill passed, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hailed this new law as a pivotal moment in the annals of Zionism and the state of Israel. He said this, quote, "We enshrined in our law the basic principle of our existence. Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people that respects the individual rights of all its citizens. This is our state, the Jewish state. In recent years, there have been some who have attempted to put this in doubt, to undercut the core of our being. Today, we made it a law. This is our nation, language, and flag." So you notice something really important there in that quote, is that he is saying that Israel is the nation state of a Jewish people. We have this people here, the people are the Jews, and their state is Israel. Now, this bill makes the fact that Israel is the Jewish state an integral part of its common law, which is akin to a constitution. But this new law actually underscores Israel's biblical identity, which is critical to know if we are to understand Bible prophecy. And so for today's program, we're going to look into just who the modern state of Israel is in Bible prophecy and show how this new law makes it pretty clear. We'll be right back. On May 14, 1948, the Jewish leadership gathered in Tel Aviv and they had a fateful decision to make. A month earlier, the British authorities had chosen that day to be their final in Palestine. They were done trying to manage the situation between the Jews, the Arabs, and themselves. And the Jewish resistance had also determined that as soon as the British pulled out, that a Jewish state would be declared. Yet, even as May 14 rolled around, most people did not even know what the new nation would be called. In fact, it took a great while of time before a common name would be agreed upon by the government. On April 25th, 1948, there was a meeting of the People's Administration, which was the forerunner to the government in Israel. And this is just 3 weeks before statehood would be attained. And an agenda was proposed for convening that council. In addition to another couple items on the agenda, there was this put forth by David Remez. He said this, quote, "Similarly, a name for the state must be decided on. The absence of that decision is presently holding up the implementation of a number of essential preparatory actions." And so 3 weeks out, they didn't have an official name for the state. And that official name would only come, or may be made official, 2 days before the Independence Day on May 12th. There was another meeting on May 12th, and this was about deciding the name. And David Ben-Gurion said, "We have decided that the name of the state will be Israel, and if we had the idea of the state, then the State of Israel." And so it was going to be called the State of Israel, but there were a number of other options. It wasn't as clear to those in 1948 what this Jewish state would be called. And we're going to go through a couple of those today, and I'll give you an idea of some of those other ones. But the name Israel, or Yisrael in Hebrew, that actually only received 7 votes of the possible 10 amongst the governing body. a committee that was chosen to decide the name. There were some that didn't like that name. There were some that wanted another name for the state of Israel. And so, it was decided, though, that Israel would be the name of the state. And at 5 o'clock on the Friday afternoon of May 14th in the main hall of the Tel Aviv Museum, the ceremony took place that inaugurated this new state of Israel. The declaration was read and then went on to declare, quote, the establishment of the Jewish state in the land of Israel to be known as the State of Israel. Martin Gilbert writes about this moment in his comprehensive book on Israel's history. He said this, quote, until that moment, very few indeed of those listening to the broadcast of the declaration knew what the name of the state was going to be. Since the partition resolution half a year earlier, many different names had been proposed, among them Zion, Ziona, Judea, Herzliya. Postage stamps printed in advance in anticipation of the declaration of statehood were marked Doa Ivri, Hebrew male, since no one knew what the name would be. No one knew what the name would be until that declaration. It was a shock to some. To some, it was the right choice. To others, it wasn't. Yehuda Avner, he was in Israel. He was in Jerusalem that day as a young man. He was part of a 20 or so pack of young people that were digging trenches near Enkarim in preparation for an Arab attack. They knew that Ben-Gurion was due to speak, but they didn't have a radio. And so after dark, they sent one of their troop into Jerusalem, Mola, to find out if Ben-Gurion declared independence or not. And this, of course, is also the same day that the Brits were pulling out. And so no one really knew what would happen. And I'm just going to read a lengthy portion of Yehuda Avner's book. He eventually would become a speechwriter and a English secretary for a number of prime ministers. And he wrote this book, The Prime Ministers, I believe it was a few years ago. But it just captures this moment and the mood in Jerusalem on May 14th, 1948 brilliantly. It reflects also on the fact that they didn't know what the name would be as well. But I want to give just more context because it's just really interesting and I think you'll enjoy it. So this is Yehuda Avner writing of his experience on May 14th in Enkarim. And just as he is writing this, this man, Mola, who was the guy that they had sent into Jerusalem to find out what happened, he was on his way back to meet the troop. This is what Yehuda Avner writes. The Sabbath silence resumed, broken only by the crunch of rushing feet, panting breath, and the winded cry of Leopold Mola running out of the blackness into the light of the hurricane lamp, shouting, I have news! I have news! To a man, we raced back towards the flickering glow. Elisha Linder grabbed Mola and snapped, Well, talk! What did you find out? Is Begin rebelling? Has Ben-Gurion declared statehood? Are Arabs plundering downtown Jerusalem? What? Mola wheezed that he had heard nothing about Begin. And as for the Arabs taking over downtown Jerusalem, the opposite was now the case. The Jews were in control of the whole area. And to substantiate his claim, he opened his shabby coat wide and displayed a Union Jack tied around his waist. He then began pulling from his bulging pockets forgotten luxuries, triangles of Kraft cheese, Mars bars, Cadbury chocolate. Then he unstrapped his knapsack, and from its side pockets spilled out cans of peaches, jars of Ovaltine, and a bottle of Carmel wine. We watched, eyes popping, as Mola told how he had come by his booty. It was from the abandoned officers' mess of the British police headquarters near Zion Square. The English had evacuated the area that morning, and the Jews had simply walked in without firing a shot. Moreover, he had heard with his own ears on the radio at Cafe Atara that all Union Jacks across the country had been hauled down at 10 that morning when the British High Commissioner, Sir Alan Cunningham, reviewed a farewell guard of honour outside the King David Hotel. Cunningham had then been flown from Adarot Airport north of Jerusalem to Haifa, where he boarded a cruiser that was due to cross the 3-mile limit into international waters at midnight, formally ending the British rule of Palestine. Has Ben-Gurion declared independence, yes or no? Asked Elisha Linder beside himself. Mola took a deep breath and solemnly said, quote, David Ben-Gurion declared independence this afternoon in Tel Aviv. The Jewish state comes into being at midnight, end quote. There was a dead silence. Even the air seemed to be holding its breath. Midnight was just moments away. Oh my, what have we done? Cried one of the women diggers, fitfully rubbing her chin with the tips of her fingers. What have we done? Oh my, what have we done? and she burst into tears, whether in ecstasy or dismay, I'll never know. And then the air exploded in joyful tears and laughter, every breast filled with the exultation as we pumped hands and embraced and roared the national anthem at the top of our voices. "Hey, Mola," shouted Elisha, cutting through the hullabaloo. "Our state, what's its name?" Mola stared back blankly. "I don't know. I didn't think to ask." "You don't know?" Mola shook his head. "How about Yehuda?" suggesting someone. "After all, King David's kingdom was called Yehuda, Judea." "Zion," cried another. "It's an obvious choice." "Israel," called a third. "What's wrong with Israel?" "Let's drink to that," said Elisha with delight, breaking open the bottle of wine and filling a tin mug to the brim. "L'chaim to our new state, whatever its name." And so I read all of that just because I feel it's really interesting, capturing the moment of that day that Israel became independent. But also the fact that they didn't know what the name would be. And the first name that's even brought out there, the first idea that is recollected by Yehuda Avner is Yehuda, or Judah, or Judea, not Israel. Israel, somebody shouted out third. So that's just really interesting. It wasn't a done deal back in 1948 that this Jewish state would be called Israel. And the fact that it was called Israel actually made some things easy to understand and some things difficult to understand. And especially if we're talking in terms of biblical prophecy, it actually made things a bit more difficult to understand, calling this state Israel. Historian Walter Eitan wrote 10 years later about that moment again on May 14th, 1948, when the state of Israel was named. He says this: "The moment the name was proclaimed, everyone realized instinctively that it could, in fact, have no other. The children of Israel, the people of Israel, the land of Israel, the heritage of Israel, all of these existed in reality and metaphysically for so many thousands of years that they had exercised such influence on the evolution of mankind that the state of Israel was their logical consequence and culmination. Ben-Gurion's choice of name was hailed as a stroke of genius." Well, there are some that do disagree that Ben-Gurion was the one that came up with it. Never mind. He writes this: "In fact, it arose out of the innermost historical or tribal consciousness of us all. There could have been no more effective introduction of the new state to the world. Israel on its visiting card was as eloquent as could be. It was so evocative and so eminently true that nothing more needed to be said. It made it obvious to the world not only who we were, but that we were what we had always been, and that if the state of Israel was a newcomer on the international scene, it was in fact but the natural outward form, in modern terms, of a mystery, and as people whose roots went back to the earliest ages of man." So he writes there, his recollection, is that it made it obvious to the world who we were, calling the state Israel. But is that really true? Is that really true? I believe it actually obscured who Israel really was, who the Jewish state really was, and it obscured who Israel was as well. Now, I can understand why Israel was chosen, but it actually has caused a lot of confusion over the years, especially in terms of Bible history and Bible prophecy. The Bible uses the name Israel a lot in prophecy. Now, is that referring to the modern state of Israel? Many would say yes. But the answer is that in some instances, yes, it does. But most, the answer is no. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will look at the biblical proof and secular proof of who the Jewish state is.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. We're talking about Israel and the Jewish state law, which passed last week, which declared as part of its basic law that Israel is the Jewish state. Now, this is very important and instructive in helping us understand who Israel, this modern nation of Israel, is in Bible prophecy. One third of your Bible is prophecy. Now, most people say that they, many people say that they'd like to understand the Bible, and it's very confusing to them, especially when it comes to biblical prophecy. Some people say that they understand the Bible, they understand all the prophecy. Well, to understand prophecy, this one third of your Bible, you have to understand and have to know who the modern types of these ancient nations are. The Bible gives one name for a people, and rarely is that name transferred upon the people or the descendants of that ancient nation. And so it's critical to understand when the Bible mentions the word Israel in prophecy, who is it talking about? Who is it talking about today? Most of prophecy concerns Israel. Things are happening to Israel. So who is Israel? Now, anciently, Israel referred to a different breakup of people at different times. Namely, it was the nation that came out of Jacob whose name was changed to Israel. They weren't Jews. Abraham wasn't a Jew. Jacob wasn't a Jew. The 13 tribes that eventually came out of Israel were the Israelites. Only one of those tribes was Jewish. That was the tribe of Judah at this point, because Jew is basically a nickname for Judah. And numerous historical documents bring this out. The Bible brings this out as well, as we'll cover. Therefore, Moses wasn't a Jew. In fact, he was an Israelite, specifically of the tribe of Levi. He was a Levite. Now, through the books of Joshua, we have Israel being referred to in general. In Judges, it's still referring to Israel. King Saul, it refers to Israel. There's no division of Israel and Jew or Israel and Judah. But really, there becomes a real big distinction after King Saul is killed. As we mentioned, there were a bunch of different tribes, 13 tribes in ancient Israel. And most of those tribes, after King Saul was killed, decided that they would stay on with Saul's dynasty. They would ensure that they are led by Ishbosheth, who was one of Saul's sons. Only the tribe of Judah, they split. They split off from Israel, and they set up their own kingdom. That wasn't called Israel. Yeah, technically, they were Israelites. They were a descendant of Israel, but their kingdom was not Israel. There was already a kingdom Israel, and that kingdom of Israel was the northern kingdom of those 12 of those other tribes. The southern kingdom would eventually be called Judah. Now, notice this distinction. This is even before David becomes king over all of the tribes. 2 Samuel chapter 5 says this: "Then came all the tribes," this is verse 1, "all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron," but not Judah. Judah was already there. Hebron was the capital of Judah. David was already king over Judah. This is talking about all the other tribes of Israel. So all these tribes of Israel, none of which were a Jewish tribe, at least in the context of this verse, "came to David unto Hebron and spoke, saying, Behold, we are your bone and your flesh. In times past, when Saul was king over us, it was you that did lead out and bring in Israel. And the Lord said to you, You shall feed my people Israel, and you shall be prince over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them in Hebron before the Eternal, and they anointed David king over Israel." But again, he was already king over Judah. But this is the northern tribes. These are the tribes that were under Ishbosheth previously. Israel came to a Jewish king and said, "Make yourself king over all of us as well. Or please be our king over. Please be our king as well." So at this point, we have this league between two kingdoms. Both of them are ruled by David. Together, they're called Israel. Yes, and this kingdom, this united kingdom, this united monarchy, that would continue this way all the way through David's son Solomon's reign. Now, once Solomon died, it would change forever. It would never be the same. You wouldn't have King David's line in biblical times ruling over Israel. That wouldn't happen. They would rule over Israel in the sense that Judah was a tribe of Israel, But there was other dynasties ruling over Israel at the time in the north. After Solomon died, one of his chief advisors and one of his prime minister, basically, Jeroboam, he told his people, who were the northern tribes, and basically said, "We're done with David's house. We're done with his line. To your tents, O Israel," he said. "We're breaking off. We're no longer going to have the line of David over us." So they split off, and the 10 tribes to the north left Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, who would eventually side with the Davidic kingdom in the south. That would become two separate countries, Israel and Judah. Isn't that funny? You had two separate countries anciently, Israel and the Jews. Now today, the Jews are in Israel. The state of Israel are the Jews, or mostly comprised by the Jews. And it is the Jewish state, as this law just passed shows. But anciently, that wasn't the case. These two nations, again, were separate and sometimes fighting against each other and sometimes in league with one another. Now, from any exhaustive concordance, you can learn that the first time in the Bible that the word Jew occurs is in 2 Kings 16 and verse 6. Nowhere in all the Bible does the name Jew appear until this period. And I'm going to talk about this because it does bring attention to this fact that we're talking about separate kingdoms. Ahaz began to reign as king of Judah. You can see that in verse 1. He sat on David's throne. And at this time, there was a king named Pekah as the northern king, the king of Israel in the north. And this king, Pekah, he formed an alliance with one of the kings of Syria, and they fought against Judah. The armies of Israel and Syria were allied, and they came up against Jerusalem. And then verse 6 says this: "At that time, Rezin, king of Syria," he was the ally of Israel, fighting against Israel, or with Israel against Judah, "recovered Eilat to the south and drove the Jews from Eilat." And so this is the first place where the word Jew is used. And we find it with Israel at war against the Jews. And so in many ways, you could say that back in 1948, that these people, or the Jews there, kind of got the name wrong. They kind of got the name wrong because that's not who they were. They weren't Israel. They were not by far, yes, they were one tribe or a couple of tribes of Israel, but not the majority. They're inhabiting the land that Israel was in, but that's about it. The nation of Israel today, they are Judah. And wherever Israel is today, remember that Israel as a national name does not mean Jew. Wherever the lost tribes of Israel are, they are not the Jews. There are tribes of Israel out there that have become nations that are not the Jews. So whenever you see the name Israel or the house of Israel, Samaria, Ephraim used in prophecy, remember that that doesn't refer to the Jews. That refers to Israel, which in this case was at war with the Jews. Now, the next place in the Bible where the term Jew is mentioned, the house of Israel had already been driven into captivity, lost from view, and the term then only applies to those of the house of Judah. And so Israel was taken into captivity and the Jews remained there in the land for another 100 years. Naturally, there were some few people of those northern tribes that did come down and live in Israel, but that was not a wholesale thing that was done. During Hezekiah's time, he ruled right as the northern tribes were going into captivity. There were some that did come down to celebrate Passover. He invited them down, about 5 or 6 of the tribes, because the other 5 or 6 had already gone into captivity with the Assyrians. But those that came down actually ended up returning. Now, the Bible and secular history are clear that just after that time, this land of Israel to the north of Judah was populated with other peoples from Mesopotamia. And all the Israelites, they were exiled far away. And some might say, well, doesn't the Bible say that Israel returned to the land after 70 years? And that's an interesting point, and we'll cover that briefly. The Bible indicates that it was only the southern kingdom of Judah that could have returned to the land. If you go into that history, you'll know and remember that the kingdom of Judah, or the Jews, They went into captivity as well about 100 plus years after the northern tribes went into captivity. But instead of going into captivity to the Assyrians, the southern tribes went into captivity to the Babylonians. The Israelites, again, were long gone. Around 605 BC, Judah started to go into captivity, among which of those was the prophet Daniel, who was, yes, a Jew, because he was from this southern kingdom. And over the next 19 years, about 99% of the Jews were removed or put to death from the area of Judah. But yes, after 70 years since that time of Daniel, those that wanted to return to this area of southern Israel, at least the land, you could call it that, I guess, but this territory that was formerly held by Judah and Benjamin, they could return. But the northern Israelite tribes, those that had the name Israel on them, couldn't return, because they weren't part of the Babylonian captivity. They were long gone. None of those people returned. And the Bible is clear about this, that only those people from the southern kingdom of Judah actually returned. Now, there are two biblical passages that are critical in understanding this fact. The first is Ezra chapter 1 through verse 5. And this is at the end of those 70 years. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, Persians took over from the Babylonians, that the word of the Eternal by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, that the Eternal stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it in writing, saying, "Thus says the Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth have the Eternal, the God of heaven, given me, and he has charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whosoever there is among you of all his people, his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Eternal, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem, and whosoever is left in any place where he sojourns, let the men of this his place help him with silver, with gold, with goods, with beasts, beside the freewill offering of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem." So anyone out there who can and who wants to go back and build up this temple, I'll give you everything that you need. Those that aren't going, you can give goods and help them with gold to build up the house. Then notice who arose. Notice who he was talking to go and do this. "Then rose up the heads of the fathers' houses of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites, even all whose spirit God had stirred to go up to build the house of the Eternal, which is in Jerusalem." So you have here Cyrus saying, whoever wants to, of the captivity, go up. And which tribes go up? Only the tribes of the southern kingdom. The Israelites did not come back to this land of Israel or Judah after the 70 years. They were long gone, forgotten to history for millennia. But then notice another proof in the very next chapter. In chapter 2 of Ezra, you see all the places, all the cities that these people are settling in. And you notice that all these cities, they're in the territories that were anciently given to Judah and Benjamin. Judah and Benjamin. You don't have any of these people going to live up in Zebulun. You don't have them going to live into a country in, or a city in Manasseh or Ephraim or Naphtali or Naphtali. They come and they go into Judah and Benjamin because that's who they were. And then, interestingly enough, what was the name of that province? What was the name of the province that the Persians sent these people back to? It was Israel? No, it wasn't. It was called Yehud. It was called Judah. Now, of those living in this land, they were Israelite, yes, only as Judah, Benjamin, Levi were sons of Israel. But by far, most and the big most of the Israelites were long gone. They were elsewhere. Now, everyone that was part of the Jewish state under the Maccabees 400 years after this point, or even during the time of the Romans, they were Jews. And the nation, the name of the nation then wasn't Israel, but it was Judea, the Greek form of Judah, or Yehud, or Yehuda. Now, even the first century historian Josephus that was alive at the time draws attention to this fact. He writes, quote, "Wherefore, there are but two tribes in Asia and Europe subject to the Romans, while the 10 tribes, that is Israel, the 10 tribes are beyond the Euphrates till now, and are an immense multitude not to be estimated by numbers." That's his Antiquities of the Jews, book 11, chapter 5, section 2. And now he's confirming that those that fell to the Romans, they weren't all the tribes of Israel. They were elsewhere. They were an immense multitude in the first century CE. And these were the others that were in this area of Judea. They were just the Jews. And then after that point, when they did finally get removed from the land in 70 CE, these people continue to keep the Sabbath, the identifying sign that God gave them. So they're relatively easy to track through history. Jews are relatively easy to track through history. They don't lose their identity because they keep the Sabbath. They keep the Sabbath, and the only people really that do that, by far the majority that do that, of those that keep the Sabbath, and so it's easy to track them. But you can't track the Israelites because they stopped keeping the Sabbath all the way back during Jeroboam's time. They never kept the Sabbath. They kept Sunday, actually, and they kept different holy days. The Israelites did. They had a different religion than the Jews. But the Jews, they're easy to track, and it was those people in 1948, and obviously before, that came back to this land where their ancient forefathers were, and they set up the Jewish state in 1948. Now, looking back to that time of 1948 again, from our standpoint, to consider that any other name might have even been thrown around seems kind of foolish. But really, there is so many reasons why other names should have been considered more strongly at that time. This is the Jewish state now called Israel. But it's definitely not all of Israel. Now, considering that most prophecy actually refers to Israel, they must be out there somewhere. Thanks to the fact that the Jews always retain their identity, it's really easy to place them. The Jews are biblical Judah. So when the Bible refers to Judah, it refers to the modern state of Israel. When the Bible refers to Israel in prophecy, most of the time it does not refer to the modern state of Israel. Now, do you understand Bible prophecy? Well, the key would be to understand the modern names of those ancient peoples. Otherwise, it's very confusing, and I don't know how you would understand it. I'll just give you one example. This is Hosea chapter 5 and verse 13. This didn't happen, wasn't fully fulfilled anciently, and so it's going to be fulfilled today. It says this, "And when Ephraim saw his sickness," who's Ephraim? It continues, "and Judah his wound." We know Judah. That is referring to the modern state that we know as Israel today, Judah. And if they were called Judah in 1948, it would make it very easy for us to understand this, at least this portion of it. "And Judah his wound, Ephraim went to Assyria," another nation that we don't have Assyria as a nation state, or at least the name Assyria labeled on a nation state today. So who is that? "And sent to King Contentious, but he is not able to heal you, neither shall he cure you of your wound." And so you've got both Ephraim, a nation, obviously, in this time, and you've got Judah, who is Israel, a nation in this time, going to another nation, a king of another nation called Assyria. Who are they? Well, if we understood who these nations were, that would make this very easy to understand. Who are these people? Well, you can understand. We know from what we've covered today that in this verse, we can tell that Judah, or the modern nation of Israel, is prophesied to have a wound. And that he, along with this people, Ephraim, are going to go to Assyria for help. Now, who are these nations? You can understand, and you should understand. If Judah is a nation today, it makes sense that Ephraim and Assyria would be nations also. And you can prove that to yourself, who this modern state of Israel is and who the modern state of Assyria is, by requesting a booklet or a book that has been read by about 6 million other people. It's entitled "The United States and Britain in Prophecy." It goes through giving an identity, a modern identity, to Israel and to Assyria and to other nations that we can see on the world today. And it actually makes Bible prophecy quite easy to understand. That's all we have time for today. thank you very much for listening to the program and going through some of this history with me. If you'd like to send some feedback, you can do so by writing to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Of course, they will be emails, and then I'll do my best to get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week.